My name's Andrew Iden. Most of you know me. I really appreciate you being here. This is our first public panel at a convention, only our second event since we launched the Appalachia Comics Project. I just want to first thank everybody who came on Tuesday to our event in Waynesville, North Carolina. We had 8 creators, is that correct? And about 75, 80 people showed up from literally ages 8 to 80. I do have as the congressman say, people who are not so young, who like to follow and read these comics, which is pretty amazing to me. But then we also had some pretty, just sweet, kind little, 8, 9-year-old kids running around. I mean, it was just, it's, I think, for a lot of us, what we enjoy most about the comic space. But I want to do just a quick explanation of what we're doing, and then I want everybody on stage to have the opportunity to introduce themselves, and then I want to ask each of you questions about the roles that you've played. So first, as many of you know, I live in Edneyville, North Carolina, which is one town over from Batcave and Chimney Rock. Batcave and Chimney Rock effectively do not exist at the moment. My street that I live on is the last turn before the road closes. Without getting into the details and reliving a lot of this, because I think many of us are still processing what it was like to be in a disaster scenario in which you were cut off from the outside world, without power, without communication, where we truly had to experience that moment of fear where you look in your basement and you say, how much food do I have to last? How much can I give away? And my experience during this was that our fears that society will collapse are unfounded. At least in Appalachia, what happened is everyone pulled together. There was no asking about what party you belong to or who you voted for or what's your religion. You could be, race became immaterial. And in some ways, what I found so inspiring about that, and I think as I've talked to many survivors, what we have almost, we have almost developed a longing for that period when we set all of it aside, when we worked together, when we helped each other. And then we come back into this cesspool, this garbage fire. It is not like that elsewhere. And so as I thought about this after the storm and processed, I got angry about the misinformation that I saw was happening online, the false representation of what happened in Western North Carolina in particular, but also all throughout the region. And as someone who you have heard many, many times advocate for the use of primary sources, I thought it would be appropriate after I read this thesis from the MIT Media Lab that said part of the reason we don't have very good stories about Appalachia or stories written by people from Appalachia is because essentially, they never get the chance. And also, they so very, very rarely meet an author or a creator, someone who is actualizing their ideas, that they never see it as something they can do themselves. And I've felt that in my own existence in the region where people are like, oh my God, you write comics? Oh, like it's so exciting. If I told him I work for John Lewis, I would not get that far. But when I tell them I write comics and I give them some out of my basement, even if it's like my civics comics, they respond, they read it, they want to talk to me about it. If you read Demon Copperhead, you know how Barbara Kingsolver captured the feeling that comics, the place that comics has in Appalachia. And so as I read this report, this thesis from the MIT Media Lab that proposed the solution of co-authorship models, I said, well, I know a little something about that. And so the first person I called was Chris Sparks, a noted, I would say, organizer, doesn't fully encapsulate all that you do, but someone who's engaged in both fundraising, advocacy, comics making, everything particularly related to the struggles of our region. And we started from there. It took us a little longer than we'd hoped to put it all together. There's an immense amount of logistics, which I don't even, it's weird to go from March, which was 3 people, including John Lewis, and then an editor and a designer, to now this, which is turning into an organization where I think we've got more than 36 people already participating. We launched the Kickstarter on Tuesday, and our goal is twofold. One, we want to create a nonfiction history of Helene through the voices of the survivors, using the co-authorship model. And we've lined up this incredible list of creators, Matt Fraction, Gene Yang, Brian Michael Bendis, Nate Powell, Greg Pak, Aster D'Amico, June, I mean, it's, look on the website. It would take us, we got a time limit. But it's amazing. And the best part is now I have a list of creators who are like, bro, I want in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, I need money. Right? Because I don't think it's fair to ask the artists. Like the writers, especially like, you know, Bendis does all right. He can donate. But like a lot of these folks who want to help, I don't think it's fair to ask them to do this on a volunteer basis, right? So we launched the Kickstarter on Tuesday. I put up my own stuff too. I put up copies of first edition, first printings of March with the ash can from San Diego Comic Con, all this sort of stuff. Trying to put in what I can. We've put up $10,000 of our own money from our company and my personal money to get this going, right? And if we fund the Kickstarter at $25,000, that does not recoup anything we put in there. This is just how much we believe in, how much we're trying to get this going because it serves such a larger purpose. The second thing we want to do is then create a sustainable, and this is a long-term vision, I understand, and it is also a long shot. We want to create a sustainable institution that publishes comics for, by, and about Appalachia. The first thing I want to do is, you know how they have this Appalachia pronunciation guides, right? I wanted to have comics on the bottom. So we're working on that, right? Just different things that we can do to be creative and fundraise. And so this is in some ways some place where I'm actually far more comfortable than I usually am in some of these instances. This is a campaign. I get that stress hat. I'm going to get a few more gray hairs out of this, but you know, I love it. It's the ADHD part of me, the neurodivergent part that needs the deadline, the goal, the big thing that you got to pull off in a certain amount of time. So with all of that, you understand where we are, what we're doing. Our website is appalachiacomics.org. Let me start first with Matt, because Matt Manning is both a survivor and I call you Matt. Do you want me to call you Matthew on stage? What do you want?
I go by both, so it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. To us, he's Matt, right? This is a family event. So Matt is both a survivor and a creator in the book, telling his story. And you're working with Jarrett Rutland.
Right.
Who, if you look on your postcard, this is the piece we commissioned from Jarrett. There are signed and numbered prints available at my booth, 987. Like a y'all, a couple of y'all know that. Jarrett is a fantastic creator who's from the region who deserves, I think, a larger place in the book publishing canon and the opportunity, right? So this is where it gets a little bit like, and you were already working together on a graphic novel about Asheville.
Yeah.
So take it away and tell us what you're doing.
Well, yeah, Jarrett and I met through a mutual friend, and we're writing a 100-page graphic novel for the History Press, also our History Press / Arcadia. And it's a graphic novel history of Asheville. So I've been immersed in Asheville for a while. I've been living in the region for about 12 years, and we're settled. We're done. I went to school in New York and School of Visual Arts, and then moved to Asheville when we had kids and things. Jarrett and I we actually had to rewrite the ending of the Asheville graphic novel because I finished my script for it right before Helene hit.
Oh, geez.
And then the flood was worse than anything in history. The 1916 flood was worse than that. And we'd covered that for several pages. So I had to take out some of the stuff I wanted to cover and add Helene because when you go from writing about history to living it. So we had to include that. And so Jarrett's probably, he's a painter, so he's painted about, I want to say, maybe a third of it so far. We're hoping for a next year release, we'll see, it's kind of depending on set. But we're taking, he's taking time out of his schedule to paint a 10-page story that we're doing for this. And that's, my story is kind of about, it's about dealing with depression, and then when you see all this awful stuff happen and realize how good you have it compared to everything that's happening and kind of coping with those two opposites.
But one of the things I really liked about your story is something that resonated with me, where over and over and over again, we would get offered assistance or you would try and help somebody and they would say, no, 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 somebody else has it worse. And there's this feeling and this emotion that keeps getting enunciated where unless you lost absolutely everything, because there were people, I mean, like, we didn't even fully account for all of the deaths. People have just disappeared and they don't quite know how to count them. That you shouldn't take help, or that somehow you should feel guilty. And I think that's something a lot of people in the region are going through, and I think your story was important for that. So next, I want to go to Jonathan. We'll just keep moving down the line. Jonathan, you did the B cover for the Islands in the Sky book, which you'll see on the Kickstarter. Jonathan lives in the northernmost Appalachia Mountains in New York. But we had already been working on a series about Appalachia. This has been on my mind for a long time about the region being underrepresented in publishing. So when you were creating that cover, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the emotion and the things you were thinking about?
So I grew up in Virginia, and like Andrew said, I live now in the Hudson Valley, so sort of tangentially or on the edges of the Appalachians for most of my adult life. And then when Andrew reached out about doing a cover too, you know, and hearing the stories from Andrew, from other people that I know in the region, the imagery, I wanted to focus on, I guess you could say, positive imagery, but the perseverance, the strength, the sort of coming out of that disaster. And so the cover that we composed or that I composed was, you know, a man and a child, you know, walking through the floods, but walking into hopefully something more positive. There's people behind, there's rescue workers. It's a tragic story, obviously, but one that I think the survivors of which can really give strength and hope and like a positivity to other people who are in similar situations or who have dealt with not even situations comparable, but just difficulties, you know, that perseverance and that strength beyond, I think is worth remembering, particularly in difficult times and in circumstances like this.
And then to help fund the project, we've printed up these limited edition teasers. It's a 14-page story. Essentially a cold open for the series we've been working on that we call the Monster Appreciation Society. I'll just give you the little blurb. It says, monsters lurk in ancient mountains, Bigfoot, the moon-eyed people, real estate developers. In the southern Appalachian Mountains, the greed of man collides with the unseen world of the first inhabitants. For a group of extraordinary young people in the small town trying to raise them, the fallout changes everything. How do you parent your kids when their best friends are Bigfoot, and how do you save them all? So this is something we've been working on for years because, it's the same problem, right? It's the same thing the media lab's talking about. Like, no one's making these things. If you're not making the things, then no one's thinking about the region. If they're not thinking about the region, then they get overlooked. And then when they get overlooked, everybody there is like, how come nobody paying attention to us? We're hurting. It's how the opioid epidemic was allowed to destroy thousands and thousands and thousands of lives without anybody paying any attention. And then what do you get? You get one Hulu miniseries in a Sackler settlement and you move on, right? You have to keep this drumbeat. I mean, one of the things Congressman Lewis always taught me is that you have to constantly be dramatizing the conflict, right? And one of it right now, one of the big conflicts is in the region is like housing. Where do you live? There's not that many places to build homes. And so the rich people who survived the storm more easily had the better, safer plots of land. And the poor people living in manufactured homes were down by the creeks. And we knew families that were wiped away. And what's crazy is we were thinking about this before the storm. What Jonathan and I just offered to do is to move the series into the Appalachia Comics Project. We'll publish under the imprint of Appalachia Comics. And we want to be a steady drumbeat for reminding people about what's happening in the region. And also, we wanted to do this early so that we establish the project not just as a nonfiction initiative, but as a fiction initiative. So you can buy these at our booth, 987, like them. And Jonathan will do remarks too. We can sign them. We got special silver pens. Okay, Laura. You did an unbelievable job for us coloring Dave Marquez's cover for the A cover on the anthology.
Yep.
And we went back and forth a couple times trying to find the right amount of like tone for the project. Tell me a little bit about like how that felt, what you were thinking, how it went, what you liked, what you didn't. No, no, just what you liked.
Well, yeah, when I received the cover and I had some a little bit of direction from Lauren Sankovich, who's my editor. And I had the idea, the initial idea I had was to make it look very positive. Like, you know, there's these workers across the front, and they're, you know, holding their tools and their shovels and things, and they're standing on a mess. And there's, you know, there's the cityscape in the background and everything. And I thought, well, this should look like after the storm is cleared. Now, you know, we're getting to work and, you know, the positivity of coming together to really clean up the area. So my initial color scheme was ones of blues and greens and it was a little happy, which wasn't exactly the tone that that I should have gone with. Now I'm from Atlanta. I'm not in Appalachia, but I have grown up.
Hey, don't hold that against those from Atlanta.
No, it's all right. Atlanta's in the foothills. You know, it's way down there at the base of it. We got trees. But I've actually grown up going to North Carolina and Tennessee and areas like that just all my life. These were my family vacations. We're constantly going up into the mountains, and I hike up there regularly now. So
and at first, Reese, not ours, but like where I took
Chris,
her.
My God.
But when her and Randy came up one time, I took them out to 12 Bones for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. By the river. Yep. It's gone.
It's gone. It's just, yeah, it's amazing gone. That whole area. And I'd fallen in love with that arts district there.
Right.
And I even thought about moving there specifically for that arts district. And it's just not there.
It's just not there.
So, yeah, this was heartbreaking to watch this thing. And unfortunately, the first tone I took with the cover was a little too happy, like I said. So,
no, but I mean, I liked that you thought that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I was like, trying to go for positive. Yeah.
We needed happy. And then, I mean, when we were having discussions on the other side, it was like... I was like, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to see. My silver lining is quite large. So, I think once we figured out where to go with the tone, I think it actually came out a whole lot better because it really you felt the destruction. You felt right. the fact that, you know, the storm had left everything, had left nothing in its wake, and still though there are these people there ready to work, ready to get in there.
Well, one of the things I liked about it was so honest in that final version, mm-hmm. that maybe we don't really talk about, is that we were all really dirty.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Like, we didn't bathe.
No.
We were wearing the same clothes day after day while you're out there moving debris, scraping up gravel where you could to repair a driveway so someone could pass with a tractor moving fuel. It was wet and then it was dry. Because remember, after the storm too, then came the wildfires.
Right.
And we were just dirty. I mean, Chris, at one point, like you didn't, I live on a well. So as soon as I got power, I had water. But you had to like wash your clothes and shower at a...
So I live in West Asheville, and my mom, and so actually I'm a sixth generation person from Buncombe County, my daughter's seventh, which she likes to brag about. So there's not a lot of natives, I feel like, anymore that's, you know, really can say they've gone that far back. But we, my friend Eric in the audience and Craig, who's up in Boone, Eric's in Asheville, we all lost something from all this. I had no power for 6.5 days. My mom lives in Swan Noah. It took me 2 days to get to her, and she's almost 92, because you just couldn't do it. We had, after we got power, we finally got flushing water after about 2.5 weeks, which, let me just tell you, you'll never appreciate flushing water as much as I do when you have three women living with you. I carried a lot of water, and and then it was 53 days before we actually had water we could drink. Wow. So we're gathering water, we're getting boxes of water. We, you know, water was pretty much my morning thinking to evening thinking every day. Wow. It was hard. I would go and get stuff from my mom's house because she was staying with us a few weeks. And when you grow up in a section and you have childhood friends where their parents had homes and you drive by, there's nothing there. There's no homes. There's no streets. And I raised some money to buy art supplies for the kids at my elementary school, which I had not been to in 45 years. And the art teacher told me that over 100 children lost their homes at this one elementary school. There's nothing there. And that's really hard to imagine, but we all have those stories. And you know, I'll never take clean water to shower in, too, which we all know about.
Trying to get you to come over, though.
He did. He offered to. But the great part, talking about people working together and not being political and just wanting to help each other, 3 days after this started, Cisco dropped off a huge supply of water and food just above my street. My daughter and I packed up the car. We took water to Swannanoa, snacks to Swannanoa. She's like this in the car because we couldn't even see out. And I would try to give water away. And if someone had water, they said, no, someone needs it worse than we do. And we would go from house to house to house, giving away water. And then we found out people needed diapers. We found some place that had diapers. We got diapers and brought them back to the lady's house. I mean, it was everyone trying to help each other. It didn't matter your age. It didn't matter your color. It did not matter your politics. We just wanted to live. And this is one of the reasons why this is so important to me. When you've been there, there's certain things you'll never take for granted again. So.
Yeah. Everybody need a minute? Right. I mean, like, that's the thing. Every day you relive this.
Every day. It took me about 6 months for me not to cry when I left Swannanoa when I'd go see my mom. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much destruction that it's just really unreal. And even Craig and Boone, you know, they're still recovering in Boone. This is not just one small area. There's a lot of little towns by the river. It's going to take, I would think, decades to rebuild how it was.
And it's going to take even longer now.
And it's going to take longer now.
We were getting, despite what you may have read on the internet, we were actually getting a pretty decent amount of federal support and state support. The state's still there, but the federal government, this is why we pay federal income tax for disasters like this. I was in the process of getting an SBA loan to fix my house because we got water damage, the walls, it's going to mold. It's going to be a thing. It's fine to live in-ish. But you got to fix it eventually, right? The longer it goes, the more you fester. I wasn't asking for a grant, but I need to fix it. Now they want a deed that does not exist. It had been approved under the previous administration, like for the loan, all this sort of stuff. Now they're asking for documents that don't exist, right? They're creating situations to, like, sure, maybe it's not illegal to ask for a document that doesn't exist. I don't know, right? But that's the thing. They've gone from being solutions-oriented to problems-oriented. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. They're no longer matching for debris removal. If we don't have the money to remove the debris next fire season, it's going to be even worse, right? I mean, the fires this time around came within 7 miles, 6 miles of my valley. I don't know how close they were on you, but there were over a dozen fires just in the region. And this isn't like, you know, operating with land management. This is all down trees. Like, you go to certain areas and you see how the mountains have just been pushed over. And it is a situation that will continue to escalate. And then, you know, there's going to be a moment where something terrible happens and they'll be like, how did you foresee this? And it's like, everybody saw it coming. This is why we're here. So part of the reason that we're trying to do this in the model of paying the survivors and the local creators and everybody else donating their time, the SBA in December estimated that half of all small businesses in Western North Carolina will go out of business by the end of 2026. That is a huge amount of jobs, and the domino effect will mean that people who already are living in damaged or unhealthy homes may end up either perpetually stuck in that situation or worse, homeless, right? And then we're talking about another humanitarian crisis on top of it. And so, one, we want to put dollars into the pockets of the creators and to the survivors, because that stays in the community. And two, this is how we keep it on the national radar, right? I'm waiting to get fussed at by somebody in the national level, because, you know, I went on Clay Kane's radio show on Tuesday, and I think it broadcast yesterday or Wednesday. And he was like, well, wait, I didn't know this was all happening in Appalachia, right? Yeah. There's nobody else out there talking about this. You get the little think pieces on the news outlets where they're like, and this is the damage. And it's disaster porn. Mm-hmm. They're not giving the mic to the people who lived here. I saw Robin Roberts when she came out. They went to Buncombe County, and no offense to Buncombe County, but they didn't go outside of Buncombe County. They didn't come to Henderson County where I'm at. They didn't go to Haywood County where we kicked off the project.
Or Madison County,
Yancey County. And all of this is then layered onto this other crazy thing that's happening, where like Yancey County and other counties are trying to pull out a library system because they're spending, they are $3 million in the hole, or maybe it's even more in Yancey County because of what they've done with the library system, trying to get books about gay people out. So they've gone insane. They blew all their money. There's no federal money coming. The dominoes are going to get really bad. We can't fix all that, but we can make a comic about it.
And one thing you hear about, the federal government is coming back 100% funding to North Carolina to 90%. And some people go, well, you know, that's only 10% that North Carolina has to pay. But when there's all these houses destroyed, 50% of the businesses are closing, that's a lot of tax revenue.
That's a lot of revenue.
In the western part of North Carolina, that's going to be gone for years. So it's not really 10%. It's probably going to be more like 40%.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue. And that's something people don't think about.
So, and when you think about it, it's $1 billion worth of damage. So that means they're actually cutting $100 million, right? Which is a spectacular amount of money. So they can say 90 to 100, but like, that is not a rounding error. I don't know where you pull $100 million out of a region that's struggling like ours.
You cut it out of the school system.
Which they've done for decades now. I mean, North Carolina used to have one of the best public school systems in the country. And now we're in the bottom third. Okay. I want to tell you about our one more cool idea that's on an up thing. And then if you guys want to ask questions, we'd love to hear them. So, the plan that we've started to put together for after the book is... What's up, man? Come on in. The plan that we've started to put together for after the book is finished. And I know I'm getting a little presumptuous because we still have $18,000 to raise. But we can do this. It's also kind of touching to me because like I keep getting calls from people in the region and they're like, no, this is supposed to be funded by people outside. The money's supposed to come in here, right? But there's such a hunger to tell the story and other people caring about people wanting the story to be told. And I love that. Then we want to take the book on a road show. Y'all know how I love campaigns. Y'all know how I like to be on the road. This changes if I have kids, but you know. There are dozens and dozens of comic book shops in Appalachia, from northern Alabama, north Georgia, all the way to where Jonathan is in the Hudson Valley, and all the way up into Vermont. What I hope we can put together, and this is going to take a lot of volunteer hours and hopefully some donations. And I'm already starting to talk to hotel people to try and map this out. Take some of the creators and do a big tour, north to south. You've heard of the Appalachian Trail? Mm-hmm. We can do our own version. Going to comic shops. Going, signing the book, right? We'll have so many people involved. Hopefully we can bring in some of the you know. Bendis lived in Cleveland. I'm going to see him in July. Maybe I can beg him to come to some of these places in Kentucky or, you know, the southeastern part of Ohio or something, right? And just see who we can all get. And we'll call it Hiking the Appalachian Trail with Islands in the Sky and go all the way up and down and try and hit as many of these comic shops as we can so they get a boost. This will be, in some of these instances, the first time creators of this have ever come to their stores. You know, and after our kickoff event the other night, I am more convinced that we do not understand who all wants to read comics. Mm-hmm. We had people 8 to 80. And I think if some of us come out, right, we have so, there are so many misconceptions about what the people of Appalachia believe, what they want, what they will do. And I think we can dispel a lot of that by doing this. And I think we're just starting to get interest from national press who think like this should have died already. So they're surprised that we're still going. We've gotten now national support from people like Barbara Kingsolver, Jose Andres endorsed the project yesterday and contributed.
Nice.
And I think this is, you know, this is how you do it, right? Just one step at a time, more and more people build that snowball. So that's our goal once we get past and get the book built. The book, hopefully, if it's funded, will be able to be distributed on or about in time for the holidays. And then you get all the other cool stuff because we've gotten some really cool rewards. But also we're like going around in here being like, you don't want to take that back, do you? I drove. I'll take it. And see if we can get some other cool stuff for the backers to try and raise more money. So with that, first of all, thank all y'all for being on this panel. Now they are all willing to answer your questions about their tax returns and other things. No, thank you guys for being here. What do you want to know? What are we not answering? Because this is helpful for us too as we go around and talk about this to know what questions then you have so that the more we talk about it, the more inclusive our answers are to answer all the questions. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. I think part of the reason why I think art is the right vehicle, at least for our efforts, it's really hard to see photographs or video of like where my neighbor died. And it's a little bit easier to process it when I see some of these amazing artists represent something like that. And I think, you know, folks are doing it that way. I think there's a difference between, at least in what we're trying to do with this one book, in between cataloging or like preserving that history and like what we see as a third person observer and storytelling from the first person perspective to try and get all the elements of the human experience that they lived and went through. In fact, there is a great actual group that is doing video documentaries on that. So it's more of a triage of like, yeah, they do that better than us. And I think they are doing it. We're trying to do what we do really well. And I think also a little bit of therapy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we've got a folder of video. We've been having discussions about what do we want to show, and it is that line of, for those of us who live in the areas that are photographed, for those purposes, it's a little humiliating.
And it's also very hard to imagine the scope of what happened. We went down to the River Arts District to Carrier Park, for people who know where that's at in the room, and I took photos one evening. And the destruction just does not show up on film. Like, you just cannot, especially if you took your kids since they were like 2 years old to this park and play. And then you see it now, a photograph or a video does not really do it justice. Where I think the artist can do that.
Yeah. But it's all about complementary efforts, right? I think there's a lot of people all working together in different ways. The promotion, what we're doing this week is, while everybody's here at the show, and Matt, we got to schedule this, is we're going to have people doing videos talking about their stories. We also will be starting to unveil early art. I'm going to have lettered pages going up next week. We had to, you know, we've got to balance the budget with, you know, what we can commission and guarantee. I'm not asking anybody to work that we can't pay them to do. So next week we should have some early lettered pages from Nick Filardi. Nick Filardi, for those of you who don't know, is a colorist in the comics industry that's worked on just about everything. Who lived in Fletcher. He's my colorist on my Taste of Justice series. And this is going to be the first time he's ever written a comic. And he's writing it with his wife, Shannon. And it is about, it starts off about their struggle for water. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to try and show those soon. Hopefully Monday or Tuesday, depending on how much I can get done this weekend. But yeah, no, I think showing more of these stories, using social media to do it. A lot of y'all saw my video on Monday. That's my rock wall that held up. God bless it. Mama built a wall, you know? And then, yeah. Yes, ma'am. You were...
You just answered it. I was wondering about early pages.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're going to start next week. I was emailing with, I forget who's coloring. It wasn't Josh Reed. It was, they're Brent Schoenover pages.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. So they've already come back. We've got two. We may have more, but they'll be colored. Or they won't be colored because Nick isn't, I mean, he's going to color them, but it's like he's finishing the book. And so they'll be lettered and out next week, I think. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. And then I'll come back to you.
One thing people are probably going to want is how to help. So aside from backing the Kickstarter,
yeah,
or supporting you, there are additional resources that you could provide.
Yeah. Well, we take direct contributions on the site. What I really need is either enough money or somebody willing to do as a volunteer right now to do outreach for me, because you get 1,000 incoming. I want to help. Tell me how to help. And when you start navigating these different piece parts, right, where it's like, okay, you can host an event for us. I need you to call X number of people. And there's a lot of legwork in that. So if anybody wants to help with outreach on a sort of semi-part-time basis, I would prefer to pay people if I can. But right now we don't have that money yet. It's those sort of piece parts where the more people know about it, the more support we get, then you keep it, you know, same sort of thing. But a lot of that's going to be updated through our website, AppalachiaComics.org. Jamie and Chris help keep that up to date. We're going to try and harden our digital infrastructure as things go along. I wish you'd seen Chris, bless his heart. He put up the first version, and it was just like all the like terrible stories about the aftermath. And now we've like slowly built out content. Jamie just put up a new statement on a purpose. We've got things, different things. We're just working to build it out one step at a time, which honestly, to me, as somebody who's been so long in Washington where nothing was grassroots, I'm loving that part of it. Like, it's stressful, but the fact that there's a true, genuine, authentic grassroots effort, it feels really good to be back in that saddle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you had a question, and then we got to wrap it up.
I was just going to say, it sounds like a really awesome project. As somebody who lived through in Asheville, this experience and stuff, yeah, people don't understand outside of it the, you know, environmental impact from, you know, we're talking about global warming and things, how that then took out the technology that we're all reliant on, and all of a sudden,
right,
you know, we couldn't use a cell phone for, I mean, a week, and my mom's like, why didn't you call me and let me know you're alive? I'm like, I couldn't, and the carrier pigeon didn't fly fast enough in this situation.
We ate the pigeon.
That's why we kicked off at the Pigeon Community Center as in memorial.
I have not told Mo Williams that the pigeon's no longer driving the bus. We ate the pigeon.
But the other thing, too, is like the whole volunteer aspect of it. I mean, I was going out trying to volunteer, and one day I got to volunteer and was helping out a bunch of people, and then the next day they were full up on volunteers. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, I love this community that we all came out to pitch in and do this stuff. So it was really amazing. But as far as the question for you, as far as the Kickstarter project is concerned, how is that structured? Is there different tiers to the Kickstarter project?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a lot of cool stuff on there. The best part is everybody's been donating stuff, and it's like slowly grown. I think we're going to be adding more tiers next week. So we started off, we had donated books from Jose Andres. You know, you can do a meet and greet, like just chat with Bendis or Fraction, or if you want me to look at your nonfiction comics idea, which I know some of you have already reached out about, but now you can contribute and I'll do it willingly without a little bit of grousing. Then we get into the more physical rewards of like the books, digital prints, like you can get prints of Jarrett's that are signed and numbered, different like physical rewards that are coming out that are directly like, I mean, like this is a, we printed the prints from Jarrett's piece and Appalachia, he made it, you know, he signed it, all that sort of stuff where these like authentic items. And then I think next week we're also going to roll out tiers where you can both purchase your copies and then purchase copies to be donated to schools and libraries.
Oh, I love that.
Because I think that's a key part of this where these schools and libraries lost their collections.
Mm-hmm.
And then with all the misinformation that went online, it is very important that we have the books in the schools and libraries so that if anybody does have questions about it, here's a firsthand account. Boom. Easily accessible, wide amounts of people. It's a comic. Boom. Right? That's how we create a common understanding in the storm. And it's one thing to give statistics or numbers or you know, death counts or whatever. You hear a personal story, that's what sticks with you. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to get to.
And not only did I raise money to get some art supplies to the school that I went to, but I asked creators I know to donate books mm-hmm. to not only give to the middle schools in Buncombe County, but also the kids who lost everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you have your library and you lose everything, you know, I wimpy kid book's great when you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we all, you know, we're all trying to do what we can. So
we're starting over, but that gives us an opportunity as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're getting kicked out. So come see us. Come by the Drink and Draw tonight and, you know, support another great cause. Andrew's going to be there. You can ask him questions, and we'd love to see everybody.
And Jonathan will be doing remarks at 987. And anything else, just holler at us. Email is info@appalachiacomics.org. Thank you all.
Thank you.
You yeah, said that perfectly.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I was like, I wanted that.
Yeah.
And you did it.
Honestly, if you need any more help from me, just let me know. I'm glad to help.